Can low-code help you build tools out of molten metal? Welcome to Low-Code Ninjas. My name is John Kinsier.
And my name is Peggy Unsaltz. And today, John, we're chatting with an amazing leader at an amazing company. You'll know it. 115 years of history, I'll let you guess perhaps, inventing some of the most critical technologies we use today. What do you think it is?
Literally the mouse and WYSIWYG and stuff like that. The company is Xerox. It's one of the few companies whose name became a verb. Xerox literally invented modern computing, and now they're reinventing manufacturing and many other things.
And of course, in that vein, it's supply chain, right? It's what we're thinking about now. It's where we've seen the most change, the most acceleration, the modern corporation, the enterprise of the future. And not just looking at supply chains, but also the customer portals so that you can manage what you're doing. So you can even change and adapt what you're doing. And you guessed it. How do you do that at the speed of change? Well, you use low code and no code technology. So today we're chatting with Momen Mirza. He's head of innovation marketing at Xerox. And we also have Riyad Lemesheish. He's VP of business development at Follow Analytics. So welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, both of you. Super happy to have you. This is very cool. Momen, we've been waiting for this for a while. It's been tough to schedule you. You're a busy guy, but we're looking forward to this.
Thanks very much for having me. Yeah.
Great to have you, Momen. And we had a little bit of a talk, you know, before this and talked about what you do. We haven't talked about it here. I mean, head of innovation marketing, very interesting. What do you do?
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to be here and obviously very excited about what I do at Xerox. In terms of what I do day to day, it's basically taking the things that we have coming out of R&D that are going commercial and really helping support that, helping support them going to market, bringing the message out to, you know, potential prospects, raising awareness around new areas that we're getting into. Some of the really exciting stuff that, you know, I think you indicated, 3D printing for manufacturing. This isn't sort of prototyping 3D printing. This is, you know, basically production grade 3D printing in metal. Other things we're working on, industrial IoT, a number of aspects of industrial IoT. We're working on some longer range things around clean tech. So not sort of, you know, the usual technologies that Xerox has been known for in the workplace. Of course, we have those. We're market leaders in that area as well and have always innovated in that area. But we're looking outside the traditional office into other workplaces, such as the industrial workplace.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting expansion. I'd like to just pull back for a moment and talk about, you know, what is it that you are solving or hoping to solve with low code, no code? What's the problem? What's the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question. And as you can imagine, from my perspective as running innovation marketing, really the focus is on how do we get the future customers that we have for our offerings, the full value of the offerings. I mean, these are innovation offerings, so it's early days for many of these domains. Even if you think about sort of industrial IoT, which has been certainly been around for several years, it's still really early days, right? And the things that are on our mind are really how do we have our customers, as we're releasing these offerings, getting the full value out of the solutions? And that's really where I think that the future lies for low code, no code in industrial applications. I see a lot of parallels between where the industrial IoT and industrial applications such as 3D printing are today and where we were in telecom about 20, 25 years ago when I was just starting my career. And network devices, network elements were getting instrumented, were starting to emanate data in a way that they never had before. You had insight into what was happening on your network. And I think similarly now, we're on the cusp of that era where industrial manufacturers, industrial processors, they're starting to see the types of insight they can get into their industrial workplace. Mm-hmm. And low code, no code allows them really to start accessing and manipulating that in a way that was too complex and really unwieldy in the past. I think that's kind of where we're headed. I don't think we're there yet, but that's where we're headed.
You talk about a really exciting evolution of, you know, where we've been and where we're going, and we'll talk about the future as well. But when did you first realize that you needed low code, no code in the work that you're doing?
Well, I think I would say that, so given sort of my history in enterprise software as well as IT, a few years ago, I was running the consumer IoT lab for Verizon. That's where I was before I was at Xerox. And we were building a number of products in consumer IoT. If you remember, like, you know, 6-7 years ago, consumer IoT was the big thing that was happening. And, you know, it was the Nest was out, you know, the Drop Cam, which is now the Nest Cam. There was the Echo device was coming out. And some of the work we were doing at my lab was just in advance of some of those things coming out and around the same time. And one of the things that we realized is that IoT is very exciting, definitely in the consumer space, but it was really kind of difficult to manage for the end user. You wanted to connect your thermostat to your new cool, you know, lights that you had, the colored lights, and you wanted to have, you know, a little bit different temperature feel. If you wanted to have movie night, you wanted to be a little bit warm and cozy. If you wanted to have, you know, a workout time, you wanted to have a little different feeling at your home. And it was just difficult to get all that stuff to work together. I think, you know, fast forward 5-6 years now, and things are certainly better. One would argue that, you know, it could get much better. But if you take that trend really to heart, that what comes to the consumer eventually comes to the enterprise and to the workplace and consumerization trend, then you'd say we have a long way to go still. And as soon as I saw sort of what we're facing, what our customers are facing in their industrial environment, as they look to adopt new technologies like 3D metal printing, we realize there's going to be a lot of value to the low-code paradigm.
That is a fascinating evolution and a fascinating insight into how the consumerization of technology and the experience of technology has gotten better and still has a ways to go, but how you're taking that into the industry as well. Absolutely love that. I want to take a half step back because you made a very interesting comparison between stages of technology and low code and how that's helping. But you just released some amazing 3D printing news. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, we're, you know, it's extremely exciting. We've been working on it for a couple of years now. We had our first installation of our 3D liquid metal printer, the LMX. At the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, you know, not too far from where I am right now in Palo Alto. And, you know, it's a huge step, not just for us as a provider of the technology. We think it's a huge step for the industry in general, but also for that segment of the market, which would not have been able to look at 3D printing, particularly in metal, as a solution for problems that they had. And I particularly bring that out because I think, you know, our differentiation with this solution is that we are taking in kind of standard metal wire, aluminum wire, and producing production grade parts out of it as we work through this partnership with the postgraduate school. And that introduces a whole sort of set of problems that we can address that others would have had a difficult time doing just because of safety issues of powder-based technologies. Like, you know, they have their own combustion risk and ships aren't comfortable having them on board. So it's one of those things that, you know, technology, which has been around for quite a while, 3D printing, is now, you know, coming into its own and being able to address new use cases, which were not accessible to customers before.
It's super interesting because that kind of parallels the low code evolution as well. And the strength of what you're doing there versus additive technologies for 3D printing is just amazing. Why is that really critical right now? Why has that been really critical in the last 12 months with what's happening with COVID, pandemic, and supply chains?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the last 12 months have been just completely crazy for the world, right? And in terms of the human impact and sort of the trauma of that. At the same time, they've also been very, very strange for businesses. You know, many businesses have tried to keep up with demand, especially those that really sort of had products which were in high demand or had, for example, machinery that was out there that was being taxed in ways that it hadn't been before. And so you started to see, you know, wear and tear on machines that wasn't expected. You start to see the need for spare parts at a rate which may not have been expected. Or, for example, you know, you were a manufacturer and you would normally get spare parts in for your machines, which you expected to have wear and tear on. but you couldn't get them anymore because wherever you were sourcing them from was in lockdown.
Yeah.
And I think we all realized the fragility of supply chains in this era and the need for resiliency. And I think the point at which, we've now put out our technology really kind of spoke to the needs of the market, because lots of industrial leaders are looking for improving the resiliency of their supply chains with adding new capabilities really to their arsenal of capabilities. And I think everything is around that whole idea of resiliency. Obviously resiliency for us as the human species in the face of this pandemic, but also in terms of organizations that are really trying to figure out how to do business going forward.
You know, what's really cool to me there, Peggy, just listening to that, is that, I mean, obviously low code enables people in the enterprise, people in a company to do things they couldn't do before. 3D printing has had the same impact during this time of supply chains and other pandemic related issues.
Absolutely. And I was just thinking that the importance of something like 3D printing is also going to be, how can I use it? And how can I use it quickly? How can I change it? He's talking about fragility in the supply chain. And it may be that I want to make something or make something different. I have to do that very quickly. So you can hear how low code is really coming into the picture here of being part of the workplace. I think that's what's exciting.
Cool. So Riad, how is low code essential to your customer success and your customer portal that you've been working on?
So if we take the example of IoT, one of the things that we can see in particular is a lot of the success of IoT is to make it available and in industrial setup on the floor, meaning that the customer needs to be able to go away from its desktop computer and being able to run some kind of operation, being informed, and also being able to basically get access to whatever is expecting to see and to be able to do on his desktop. And that's where I think mobile and especially mobile apps can shine, because they can empower basically the workforce to gain access to exactly what they are used to on the desktop. So you don't reinvent the wheel by building new process, by limiting and saying, okay, I've done this mobile app that is like 10% of what you used to do on the desktop. So the key features, and then you have something that is unexpected that is happening, then you need to go back to your desktop to be able to execute it. And also one of the kind of interesting thing is all the thing around alerting, because a lot of IoT is about process. Can you imagine having your Philips Hue lightning and not being able to get your phone and just change the color and be able to switch on your desktop or even have an alert for your Nest that the temperature has go down or something, the power is out, and you expect to receive an email for that? I don't think so. The alerting is something key, because IoT is a lot about processes. And what we saw, and indeed Park was instrumental in this, is that IoT is based on the promises of something being in some way invisible. So you don't want to have wires, and you don't want to, you want it to be here all around you and being able to have an interface that is, I'll say, easy to use, that is unified. And this is the smartphone that is today that cover this promise of one single interface and mobile apps that are specialized, but enables you to basically cover the need, whether they are in terms of data, action, alerts, all of this kind of thing.
I love your emphasis on ease of use. I'll give you an example where we don't have that. I have some smart lights right over there, and I can change the hue, I can change the color, I can change the brightness, all that stuff via my mobile, but it's also connected to HomeKit, Apple's home automation software. And in some way, somehow it got connected to a garage door opening and closing. I'm not sure how. And now whenever somebody leaves a house, my lights turn off. And I just, it just hasn't annoyed me enough to get into the details and fix it. But I will one of these days.
I also love the way that it's one space. You know, it is the smartphone using that as the interface. I mean, why reinvent the wheel, right? That's what it's about. I'd like to understand a little bit more about how you're making this happen. This customer portal is part of it, but how are you working with Moment to realize this?
Yeah. If you look at whether it's a Xerox or other company, the promises is basically not to reinvent the wheel indeed, and to not make the mobile a silo. Because a lot of things we saw, whether it's on industrial or financial services, is that they're going to have a great idea of saying, oh, let's do a mobile app. Let's build it from scratch. And then what's happening is that at the beginning, you have a lot of energy in the organization. And so you do something that is sometimes even better than what is already existing. But then after 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, then you find yourself with something else to support, a new part of your organization, a silo that is basically has its own roadmap that needs to be aligned with the rest of the organization. So if Xerox is to release a new feature, a new service, a new device, they need to take into account, okay, I need to build the software in the device and also build a desktop, some kind of portal, APIs, and also build a mobile app on top of it. And all of this is to be maintained by different people with different roadmap, different velocity. That's where we can help by saying, okay, let's not make mobile app a silo, but being integrated with everything that exists. And so we leverage especially web assets that are today the gold standard. If you look at any kind of IoT device, they always have a web portal that is sometimes embedded the device that you can access from a regular browser. So we count on that to basically bring velocity and also to reduce maintenance. So tomorrow when Xerox wants to upgrade some capability by deploying an update on some system, they will do it on their side, and then the web portal will be updated and the mobile app will be seamlessly up to date. As soon as you reopen your app, you have a new version. You don't need to say, okay, I need to push a version to Google Play, Apple App Store, and maybe in a couple of days gonna be up and running, and maybe some of my user gonna be in a fragmentation mode, meaning that they didn't update, so everything is broken, or they missing this feature and they're calling me saying where it is, while they just didn't do the update. So all of these things is where we can help organizations like Xerox.
Amazing. I was just kind of laughing inside when we were going through the process. You know, if you're going to build the app yourself, right, you build the specs, create a team, get developers working on it. Oh, shoot, the specs changed. Start redeveloping. Oh, don't forget, you're not supporting that particular Android phone. All the work that you have to do there. And I didn't even think about this, that when you update the app, it's automatically updated. You don't need to go through Apple or Google and App Store approval and all that other stuff, which, by the way, is really slow right now because Apple's changing major things in iOS 14. And so there's a big backlog. So that could impact your rollout plans. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just to jump in, and I think great points, Riyad, on sort of the landscape of managing change that exists in the enterprise today. And I think something similar, you know, as we've learned by being players in the enterprise for a long time, in some ways, basically pioneering enterprise technology, the user experience is really, really important, right? I mean, you know, in the early days, it's the technical teams that are kind of handling and hand-holding deployment of technologies into the business. But as things pick up pace, as business, you know, starts to really rely on the technologies, on the data that's coming out of the technologies which have been deployed, user experience just becomes critical, not just for usage, but for change management, for business users to have privileges to make changes on the fly so that business doesn't get impacted and you're not waiting around for, you know, a team of engineers who are scarce as it is to give you the time and, you know, you're getting in line for that. And I think this is something similar is happening and it's certainly going to happen more in the industrial environment as well. And, you know, as Riyad alluded, Park, you know, our research center at Xerox, which is looking at, user experience for a very long time and you know, has innovated around that for a very long time as well. These are the kinds of things we think about. We recently acquired an augmented reality company at Xerox, Care AR, and that's a platform for supporting service in the field, whether it's IT service management or field service. And you can sort of start seeing how we're thinking about what the user experience is going to be for those who are out there with operational technologies. So, you know, there's a big discussion around IT versus OT and the convergence of these technologies. And I think that's really where some of this is going, is bringing intelligence for support and service and change management, whether it's through mobile apps or through augmented reality, really making it accessible in a way that's intelligent and automated and able to handle changes that are timely for running businesses.
I love that thought as well because of the usability aspect. You know, you talked about consumer technology at the start. We are a bit spoiled or accustomed, whatever you want to call it, to these experiences. And we're going to want and demand them in the workplace. I mean, there's so much research even about just attracting talent to your company that usability is what may decide whether someone comes to work there or not. You know, people are not going to go through hoops and deal with friction. Another thing about the enterprise that's changing, that you're talking about need for this automation, for this assistance, and we're talking also about the need for the apps. That's going to explode, right? Internal, external apps, 500 million, according to Microsoft. We love that number because that's frightening to think about. Not a lot of time to make it happen if it's going to be happening by end of this year. I just want to hear you both talk about it, but I'll start with you a moment. You know, what can low-code do here? How can low-code help?
Yeah, it's something that I've thought about over the last several years as well. As I mentioned, I was at Verizon before. And so mobile, you know, mobile is a big, big thing, the way Verizon thinks about the consumer experience as well as the business experience. And I think everybody realized that apps are going to just continue to proliferate, and not just be for, you know, whether it's for games or messaging, but really for everything. They become the interface to so many different functions that people need, whether in their personal lives or business. One of the very interesting things that I've been learning about the industrial environment is the impact of making really a strong user experience on the, you know, even sizes of teams that need to be deployed to architect solutions. So I was recently speaking with a very senior engineer at an industrial robotics firm, and he was telling me about sort of his competitive landscape. And the fact that in industrial robotics, if a customer is looking to deploy a new solution, the difference between them having a very well-configured and well-built tool for designing the solution, let's say a low-code tool for designing the solution that they're looking to buy, is the difference between them having to put 5 engineers on the project to architect the solution. This is the customer side. Versus 50 engineers. So there's like a 1-to-10 ratio. Wow. That, yeah. So, if, you know, and if they pick the wrong vendor that's using sort of old school legacy tools and not something which is more up to the task, which is more low code, which is more intelligent, they will be in deep trouble because they have picked a vendor that has a solution that requires a very heavy requirement for expertise. And this is not, you know, 50 engineers showing up for a day to have a chat. I mean, we're talking weeks of work here. So definitely big impact in ability to stay competitive and, you know, in your choice of tools and then making that fit.
Amazing. Amazing. Riad, I want to turn to you. And we're talking a little bit about the enterprise of the future, right? What it looks like, what those apps look like, whether there's 500 million or 400 million, whatever it is. Do you see kind of a drag and drop enterprise of the future?
We've been close to it. It's not real yet. But there's a lot of bricks that have been combined over the years, and I'll just list some of them. And one of them is, and I don't think anybody here will disagree, is that first of all, you need great hardware, because we say software is eating the world, but in reality, if you have software that you cannot run properly or that is not well defined, that's useless. And so indeed, in some way, software is eating the world. But you need smartphone with great capability, technical capability in display, memory, speed, and also you need the ecosystem around. So IoTs, whether it's your 3D printers that basically is well available through APIs and has the right function, that's also a part of it. You also need all your data strategy to be aligned, because if you want, you're an enterprise, you need to collect data, but you need also to be able to use it. So you need to have the right way to collect that data and also to exploit it. So all of this go along. Obviously, the API strategy that I already talked about needs to be something that you're able to easily implement around the organization. And in regard to the app, if we go down to a mobile app and to the user interface, Apple and Google has done a great work over the years to bring us with a key on which to build. So if you take the evolution over the last 10, 15 years, now you have Apple and Google, for example, that provide you with AR kit kind of capability, where you just give them a 3D model and you say, display that to me and let me play around on my iOS or Android phones. And then they have the hardware acceleration that is optimized, and you think like you're just playing with something real, and it wasn't the case 10, 20 years ago. So all of these things make the low-code possible, because if you want to do drag and drop, you need this box that you drag and drop to be self-functioning and performant and being able to hook one to another. So all of these things, this box, are getting checked one by one over the years. And I think we're in a great place now to be able to consume all of this great capability through close to drag and drop. Yeah.
So we're getting close. We're getting close. We're not there yet, but we're getting close. When we don't have that, when it's hard to build stuff, what are we missing? What are the opportunities we're losing out on?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it goes back to this concept of how do you have agility in your business? How do you have resiliency in your supply chain? I think where there's complexity, where there is a need for deployment of a large volume of highly skilled resources every time you have any issue of significance come up, it's a sign of fragility in your supply chain. It's a sign of you not being agile enough in your business. And in sort of the very, very competitive environments in which many of our customers operate, certainly, it's really not a good thing at all. And I think that's where you find, especially, going back to this idea of where are we in the industrial environment today versus where are we in the enterprise? I think one of the things that we know is that there is a huge demand for talented engineering, software, hardware resources out there. And the enterprise players, especially, let's say, the internet giants, are in a very advantaged position when it comes to getting access to those resources, because they have sort of a machine in place for recruiting. They have a machine in place for recruiting, but they also have very high profile applications that are used by billions of people. And so naturally, the top talent tends to gravitate towards where there is a clear and apparent impact. On the other hand, many of the industrial players in the world are behind the scenes. They power all those things that all of us need, but may not necessarily know the brands of, right? And so they are always kind of in a search for great talent as well, just like everyone else, but they're fighting for that talent against those who have very sort of well-recognized consumer brands. And that just tells you how much of a challenge it's going to be if they don't have the right tools, if they don't have low code tools, if they don't have good hardware, if it's not well connected, if they haven't gotten to the point where they're going to have sort of industry 4.0 principles and technologies in place. It's just very difficult to compete. And I think that's one thing that everybody's coming to a realization of as they retool for, for the next decade.
Great, great answer. Okay, cool. So we are going to move to a segment that is, we're just looking for one-liners here, a real brief. And first one is low code no-no. Moman, one massive mistake the enterprise shouldn't make.
Don't introduce low code if you don't have good integration between your hardware solutions.
Cool. Riyadh, same question.
Don't switch from one specific expertise, like in mobile, a native developer, to another one, which is a new language to be learned with. So don't switch from one type of expert to another one that you can't manage internally, let's say.
Very good. Low-code nugget. Moman, one low-code nugget for the enterprise, something they must do.
They must adopt low-code solutions. No matter where they are in their integration journey, no matter where they are in their transformation journey, they need to start getting to know these tools. Even if it means having a small implementation, they need to understand what it means for their enterprise.
Riyadh, same question. One low-code nugget for the enterprise, something they must do.
Don't limit it to like individual contribution. Okay, it's going to be for my finance people. A few of them want to play around with it, but it's something that can transform within the organization at scale.
Cool. Moman, first light, your very first experience with low code.
Consumer IoT, running the consumer IoT lab, playing with, trying to connect a number of IoT technologies. This is several years ago, and putting a smile on our face when we were able to connect the lights to a button that wasn't part of the original platform.
Nice, nice. Riyadh, same question. Your very first experience with low code.
For me, it would be something that looks like front page or something like this, or WordPress, which is low code as well.
Yes.
Something even, probably something older than that I forgot.
Front page, if I recall, is a Microsoft app for building websites, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, been a while, but I saw that. I remember a couple of those. Okay. Next segment, top trends. Moman, what is the biggest trend in low code or no code right now?
I think it's really for mobile, getting apps built quickly, reacting to market needs, and being able to do that without having a huge, heavy engineering burden to make it happen.
Wonderful. Riyadh, same question. Biggest trend in low code right now?
Something that is enterprise-wide, which means like the mobile app. So it's no longer Excel companion that we place on one desktop for one user, but it's something that is embraced at the company level.
Oh, interesting. Low code goals, multi-user, multi-platform. Yeah. Very, very cool. Last segment, low code nerd. Moman, what low code technology do you personally geek out with?
I think it's really around IoT. So I think it's still early days, but very, very excited about the future of low code for IoT, especially coming up on IIoT for industrial IoT. Yeah, definitely excited about that.
Wonderful. Riyadh, same question. What low code tech do you geek out with?
Yeah, I use things like EventVat, or the one really interesting is Airtable, I think.
Yes.
Because it's really enable you to do lots of things.
Very, very cool. Well, Moman, Riyadh, thank you so much for joining us on the Low Code Ninjas podcast. We really do appreciate your time. Peggy does too. She's having audio issues right now, but we'll get that fixed for next time. Mm-hmm. For everybody else who's watching, thank you so much. Like it, share it, subscribe on all the platforms. We also want to hear from you. Are you a low code legend that we should be featuring on the show? Let us know. Email us, DM us. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Twitter. We're all over the place. Until next time, this is John Kutzier for Low Code Ninjas. And I'm also signing off for Peggy and Salt. Until next time, I'll say Peggy's line. Stay safe, keep well, and we will see you soon. Thank you so much.